It's like, I don't know if it matters.
Yeah.
I don't know.
With advanced plus audience, I just feel better about myself if I give it a push and say, hey, start with this group of people.
Ahoj PPCčkaři, marketáci, e-shopaři a další fandové PPC kampaní. Vítejte u PPC Podcast.cz, prvního českého podcastu ryze o PPC reklamě. A do dnešního dílu jsem si pozval Johna Loomera, odborníka na meta reklamy a vlivního vlogera a blogera. Já osobně Johna sleduju už dlouho a je to pro mě cenný zdroj inspirace právě při tvorbě facebookových reklam. A tenhle díl výjimečně je i s videem, takže si ho můžete užít na YouTube a nebo na Spotify. A celý rozhovor je logicky v angličtině a předplatitelé na Forendors a najdou verzi i s českýma titulkama. Každopádně já věřím, že vám angličtina nebude dělat problém. Každopádně pokud chcete přispět na tenhle podcast, podpořit mě v tvorbě dalšího kontentu, vyražte na forendors.cz, psáno tak, jak slyšíte, / ppcpodcast.cz, forendors.cz / ppcpodcast.cz. A teď už si pojďte poslechnout rozhovor s Johnem Loomerem. Hello, PPC and marketing people. Welcome to PPC Podcast CZ, the first PPC podcast in Czech Republic. And if you are familiar with this podcast, you're probably wondering why I suddenly speaking English, and admittedly not too flawlessly. That's because today I'm joined by Meta Ads superstar and founder of John Loomer Digital, John Loomer himself. Welcome.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate you speaking in my language. Unfortunately, I'm not cultured enough to be able to speak in yours. So now this will be fun.
My first question for you is, what are you drinking today?
Oh, so it's 8:30 in the morning. And it is a Friday, but not quite late enough for a beer. So I make a latte every morning. So that's what I'm working on.
Yes, I go with a beer, BrewDog. Scottish brewery. They have great marketing. And This is Dead Pony Club Session IPA. I never had this one before. So, we have a situation here.
Is it going to go all over? Hey, I mean, I hosted a pubcast for years and I can't even tell you the number of times I opened a can and poured it and it went all over the place during the show. It's good stuff.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about podcast because if I'm right, the last episode was aired like 6 months ago. So what's the current situation with it? Is it retired for good?
So it's a funny thing. It was a pretty big part of my business, at least my business strategy, right? Not necessarily monetized, but I was committed to it for a long time. I think the biggest thing that happened was 2022, I committed to short form video at the end of 2022. And the amount of time and energy I dedicated to that, I needed to prioritize. So for a while there, I was repurposing those short form videos into short podcast episodes. But, you know, it's just not the same. I hadn't done interview style or just kind of casual with a beer for a long time. And it's just one of those things where if I had a second one of me, I'd be able to do it. But I had to pick something without driving myself crazy with just not having any time to do anything. So maybe I'll get back to the pubcast one day because it was a lot of fun.
Okay, great. So, and do you having success with your short form videos? Is it better than podcast?
Look, they both have their challenges in that measurement's hard. So, you know, with podcasting, you're looking at downloads and stuff that doesn't really mean a whole lot, and can mean different things. Videos, you're like, oh, how many people viewed it and liked it and commented, whatever. You're not really, you can do things like links to drive people to your website and business and, you know, special codes and stuff like that. But in both cases, it's hard. I think video, the difference for me was there's more of an immediate response to know people were engaging and enjoying it and it was worthwhile. The funny thing about the podcast is that was always kind of in the background. And it would surprise me that every once in a while, someone would come up to me and say, "Hey, I've been listening to your podcast." And I wouldn't get a whole lot of feedback normally, but then I would hear that like at a conference or something. And then with video, it was just kind of constant, right? So not only do you get the immediate response and comments or whatever, but people would sign up for a membership or book a one-on-one and be like, "Hey, I'm here because of your videos and seeing you every day." So that's really the difference there. I mean, yes, I've grown my audience across like 5 different platforms because of video, which is really great. That's still kind of surface level. I think the validation for me that this was worthwhile is, you know, repeatedly hearing from people who bought something from me and said, "I'm here because of the videos," and that's, can't do much better than that.
Okay. Yes, it sounds reasonable. Okay, let's move to some marketing stuff. And yeah. I'm eager to get your insights on a few key aspects. So let's say go through the setting of the campaign itself. And first of all, campaign objectives. I saw your video lately where you speak about campaign objectives versus performance goals. How important it is to set the right campaign objective?
So the campaign objective is important, but it's important in different ways I think most people understand. So just because you created a sales campaign doesn't mean the algorithm cares about sales. It gives you the option to optimize for sales, but you don't have to, or purchases, but you don't have to. So it's just the first step of many to getting results that are relevant to you. So the most important thing is that performance goal. Now, yeah, if you have a sales objective, you'll have options of number of conversions, which could be a purchase. It doesn't have to be. You have to select that. Value of conversions, but also link clicks, landing page views, daily unique reach, link impressions. And those four are available on just about any other objective. There's not some secondary goal that Meta has just because you chose the sales objective. So the objective is important to a point. Just understand why it was created in the first place. The objective is there to streamline the process, because anyone who's been doing this for years knows in the very beginning, it was not streamlined. It's like you have all of the options available to you. So basically what this does is, you're telling us you're interested in sales. Okay, so let's take away some of these other options. And now when you're in your ad set, you just have these options.
So do you think it's just about the interface? So you set your campaign objective for reach and then change it to performance goal to lead sales. And is it the same?
Well, so basically, if you use the traffic objective or probably engagement or sales, and in any of those cases you optimize for, we'll say, link clicks, there's no reason why the delivery of those, your ads, should be any different between the three. Because even the way Meta defines it, when you select your performance goal, it doesn't say anything about your objective at all. And it's defined exactly the same in all three cases, or six cases, depending on your objective. It's going to do everything it can to get you as many of those link clicks as possible within your budget. That's it. It doesn't say people who are going to click your link who might also buy from you. The algorithm doesn't care. So, this is mainly my own impressions of it. But Meta is also, there's nothing in their documentation that says your objective determines how we deliver your ads. They say over and over, your performance goal does.
Okay, great. So I think we covered it and we can move on to budgets.
Yeah.
So are you a team campaign level budget, or do you prefer setting your budgets on ad set level?
Well, I tell you, these days, it It's funny because now I know a lot of people disagree with me on this one, but when it comes to targeting, I don't see any reason anymore to create, say, 5 different ad sets for cold targeting. Because if you're optimizing for any type of conversion, or obviously if you're using Advantage Plus Shopping, you don't even have the option. But if you optimize for any type of conversion, your audience automatically expands no matter what you throw in there, unless you're doing remarketing. Or if you're using Advantage Plus Audience, it's going broader every time. So if you're creating 5 different ad sets, I'm just using 5 as a number, but 5 different ad sets, you're going to have crazy overlap once the targeting gets beyond your targeting suggestions. So to answer your question, I'm using ad set budget only because typically I see no reason to be creating a whole bunch of ad sets in order to control the budget at the campaign level. So, because back in the day, it would have made sense, right? So if there's not going to be a bunch of overlap between the ad sets, set a campaign budget, CBO, Advantage campaign budget, whatever we're calling it, let it distribute between the ad sets. But I think for me, and I think Advantage Plus Shopping is a really good example, Meta doesn't want you to create multiple ad sets anymore because of the ability to go broad. And in many cases, we don't have a choice to turn it off. So that's where I sit on it. I'm definitely ad set budget. How about you?
Well, yeah, I would say I'm more campaign level budget guy. I use both, but I still do it, let's say, old way. Still trying to be more granular on it. So creating more ad sets. But yeah, I'm learning a hard way that maybe less ad sets is more. But on the other hand, I think it's more comfortable for me to have campaign budget level because, well, you can see it in your campaign list and change it there.
Right.
Well, you can do the same thing with your ad sets, but, you know.
No, it's true. Well, I think that's also why, like, I use daily budget as an example. I don't use lifetime. That's I think very similar in that it's just a personal preference. Like for me, I'm better able to understand what is it going to spend today, and I feel like I have more control over what's happening.
Yeah,
as opposed to like, okay, I set a, you know, $1,000 campaign or lifetime budget. How much is it going to spend today? I'm not really sure. You know, so. That's largely a personal preference. And we're all figuring this out regardless of what it is, right? Like, I'm really careful not to say that anything is the right way. You know, there are some hints at what Meta wants sometimes, you know? But even then, I think many of us will say that there are times where Meta's recommendations aren't necessarily favorable. They don't necessarily work for us all the time. So yeah, if you use campaign budget, more power to you. Find what works for you, though. That's the main thing.
Okay, and now is the time for ultimate clash: Advantage Plus campaigns versus the old school manual setup. Where do you stand?
So in terms of, I mean, so this is the problem with Meta right now. We got a million things called Advantage and Advantage Plus. So we got Advantage Plus Shopping, Advantage Plus Audience. Are you talking about Advantage Plus Shopping or
Advantage Plus Shopping.
Okay. So, you know, I would say that for me personally, I'm more of the manual approach. Now, if you're an e-com business, I think that's where you start would be with the Advantage Plus Shopping. And I think that's the type of business that typically gets the best results. The interesting thing with Advantage Plus Shopping right now, though, and I should probably test it too, but you can change your optimization event now, mm-hmm. whereas it used to be locked in as purchase. Now it could be any of your customers or standard events. So in that case, it would seem to me it doesn't even matter if your goal is a purchase anymore. You could probably use Advantage Plus Shopping for other stuff too. But yeah, that's something I haven't tried. I mean, how about you? Are you going manual or Advantage Plus?
definitely manual, but it's just because I haven't tested very thoroughly yet. And, well, there's tons of new stuff that you have to learn. And, well, I'm just a little tired of how Facebook constantly changes everything.
And it's also like, I've been slow to accept losing all control, which is pretty much what it is when you create an Advantage Plus shopping campaign, where you're changing very few things at all. It's just you're creating the ads, and that's pretty much it. Everything else is pretty much streamlined and set up for you. So for any of us who have been used to or maybe had fun with all the levers and controls and stuff in the ad set over the years, Advantage Plus shopping is a big change.
Yeah. It even have different structure, right? It's just crazy.
Right. I mean, the fact that it's campaign and ad set combined, and you don't create multiple ad sets. I mean, that in itself already is completely different.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to conversions. And I think conversions is probably the most crucial thing in Facebook ads. And I often grapple with the number of conversions, because many times there's just isn't enough data for Facebook to effectively optimize the campaign. So for example, I'm having like 3 purchases a week. It's taking us a step back, optimizing for, let's say, add to cart actions, a good approach to have more conversions, more data for your Facebook?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I think you're absolutely right that this is where Meta Ads is at its best, is when you're optimizing for some type of conversion. Where it goes off the rails is if you're optimizing for link clicks, landing page views, through play, any type of engagement, you can get some really low quality stuff. So that said, you know, the problem is, it's something I say a lot, is that the algorithm is literal. So whatever your optimization event, that's its goal. It's going to do everything. That's how it measures success. So it's going to try to get as many of that thing for you as possible. And assume that if it gets those, you're going to be happy. And it doesn't matter if they do anything else beyond that thing. So just like link clicks, landing page views, you know, traffic campaigns can be problematic because the algorithm sends you a bunch of traffic and these people do nothing. It could potentially be the same issue for add to cart, initiate checkout, et cetera, where for whatever reason, there is a behavior that makes sense where some people love to just add to cart, because part of it is like they expect to get an email with a discount or something. right. So it's going to go after the cheapest way to get you the most add to carts as possible. Now, is that better than optimizing for link clicks, landing page views? Probably. Yeah. I think the question is going to be, is it better than optimizing for purchase when you can't get the number of purchases you need to exit learning? Because the reality is you can often still get acceptable results, even if it's, you know, 3 purchases a week or something, as long as it keeps delivering. It may be better than spending more or getting more events when it's like an add to cart, initiate checkout, because the algorithm doesn't care whether these people buy.
Yeah.
Once you optimize for that, which is the difficult part for me. Like, it should be sophisticated enough where it understands that's really what you want, but you're trying to give it data, you're trying to give it volume. There are a lot of weaknesses in the algorithm right now and the way that works. That's definitely one of my complaints. So the main answer to you is like, absolutely test it and experiment with it. I mean, that would be one of the first things I try if the cost per purchase isn't acceptable. Like, so it's not just that you're worried that you can't get 50 a week or whatever, which is pretty tough regardless. It's that these results aren't good enough. Let's try something else.
Yeah. Thanks. It's a great, great advice. And let's move to another Advantage Plus stuff, and it's Advantage Plus placements. So what do you think? Do you use Advantage Plus placements or do you set it manually?
So this is another example where if it's any type of conversion, Advantage Plus placements, that's what you should do. It honestly is, because it's funny. Again, I used to be one of those people that would just select, you know, newsfeed and all that kind of stuff back in the day. But the way it works, let's use the example again of optimizing for link clicks or landing page views. The reason you should manually change your placements there is because, again, Meta is trying to get you as many link clicks or landing page views as possible within your budget. It doesn't care how, right? So there are weaknesses in certain placements. Anyone who advertises probably knows it's audience network, where it's just known for low quality clicks, whether it's bots before they've been detected, click fraud before it's been detected. That's where you get your refunds usually from Meta, is because they found click fraud going on audience network. Accidental clicks happen there too, just because of the way those ads are placed that Meta doesn't have a lot of control over. And so you get a lot of low quality traffic from there. But if you optimize for a conversion, funny thing happens, and you leave all placements on, Meta doesn't even try to send traffic usually to audience network, or very little of it, right? Yeah, so it's almost right. Like they know, right? So, because again, it is motivated by getting you results. If it can't get you results from a placement, it won't show your ads much there, or maybe at all. So that is why, if you optimize for link clicks or landing page views, it is probably going to spend a lot of your budget in audience network. And that is why, if you optimize for conversions, it probably won't even try. So my point being is, use Advantage Plus placements as long as there isn't that weakness in the algorithm. So if it's any type of conversion, unless there's a placement where you're like, that is prone to low quality actions for this reason, for a specific reason, like you've seen that it happens. Audience network is a great example. I haven't seen that for any type of conversion where you can say sidebar leads to low quality leads or purchases, or I mean, what's a low quality purchase anyway?
yeah,
they're not going to waste a bunch of money on a placement if it doesn't give you purchases. It's going to spend some, and that's okay. That contributes to people seeing your ads and honestly keeps your costs down. But yeah, I would say the only time you'd remove them is if you're optimizing for something top of the funnel. But at that point, it's tough to control quality regardless at that point, though.
Yeah, 100% agree. I do it the same way. Okay, let's move to ads. When you launch an ad, do you prefer starting fresh or piggybacking on existing posts?
I mean, typically an existing post. It's definitely gotten more challenging these days because if you edit an ad by placement, or you know, adding all these customizations with multiple text options and whatnot, you might not really be able to leverage the existing post in that, or the existing engagement. The other thing that's also problematic these days is because of all those customizations and the different placements, other than the primary placements, because you're going to have a fresh batch of engagement for each placement, right? Yeah. So it's not really like it was back in the old days where you just had a few placements and maybe they all leveraged like the same engagement. Honestly, that's so long ago. I feel like that's the way it was. But now it's split up between all the placements. And then you start creating multiple text options and variations by placement. So my point is, it's really hard to leverage engagement from an existing post these days, unless basically what you have is an organic post that you put on Facebook. And you could promote that, right? Like you could select promote an existing post in Ads Manager. Or you could take an ad that had been running already, promote, select even like the post ID or whatever from the Facebook feed version of it, but it's not going to leverage all of the placements in most cases. So I think that's one of those things that is, it's best practice to leverage the engagement the best you can and use the existing post. I also wonder if it's one of those things where we kind of overthink that and there might not be as much of an advantage that these days as there once was because of the way that's all just sliced up anyway. I mean, like you add the 5 multiple text options, that's 5 versions right there.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, based on a placement. So it's a lot.
So would you say just not to worry about too much, right?
Yeah, do what works for you. Do what works for you. Because I still try to promote an existing post when I can. But I think it's one of those things that I don't know how much it's really helping, to be honest with you.
Okay. So, and do you have any favorite type of creative, let's say, single image, video, carousel, collection? What drives you the best results?
It's funny because, man, I've created some video ads lately where I feel like these are going to work really well. And when it comes to driving action, they don't. And the algorithm always selects the static image for me.
Yeah, it's happened to me too.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was always that way before. You could even find like old training for me and whatnot. It's like, hey, if you want to educate people, you want to provide background on something, whatever, use a video. If you want to drive an action, use a static link ad. And that's what I was saying years ago. But then once I started actually I started feeling like maybe I was a little biased there because I didn't want to create videos, which was definitely true. And then once I started creating videos like organically, I said, okay, now I can start leveraging some of this stuff and turn it into an ad. So algorithmically, Meta has, for me, has been preferring, like anytime I want to click to my website and a conversion of some sort, when I give it options, it prefers the static link image. Now, I'm not going to say that's 100% of the time. It's always going to happen for everybody, but that's what I've been finding. And it's funny because like I'll have an ugly static ad and it chooses that over this video. I feel like that is really good. That's really engaging. And then doesn't even use it.
Yeah, you're right. I feel that, like that the uglier the ad is, the better performance.
There is a theory out there, right? I think Barry Hott's one of those guys who talks about ugly ads and the ugly ad strategy that, I mean, it's funny. If it actually is a strategy, that's what I did for years, not intentionally really, is just because I tested stuff all the time and I didn't like want to wait for a designer to create anything. I would just create just this ugly looking ad and it wasn't a strategy though. So it made it look like it was, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. And let's talk about carousels for a while. Do you usually use catalog ads or do you sometimes do some manual carousels with all the nice stuff, prepped images and et cetera?
Yeah, look, I think it's funny because just one of those things to experiment with. Like if you have a specific product or a group of specific products you want to promote, I think it's usually best to craft something manually. Either it's a single image ad for it or a carousel because you have a little bit more control over it. You can create versions of it, you know, why not? But if you're an e-com business where it's like, it's just not reasonable to do this for hundreds or more potentially products, catalog is, use the catalog as a base and then create some separate ads if you've got a certain special going on or something you want to feature, right? But it's definitely something to experiment with. I mean, even with Advantage Plus Shopping, you can test catalog creative there too. So go back and forth, find what works for you. I think, you know, for my personal, the thing is like, if everything's going to be automated, we're not doing a whole lot on the campaign and ad set side anymore. I like to have something that I'm actually doing. And the catalog, again, kind of takes some effort away. But there's also that kind of unknown when you use the catalog that I don't really like, as far as like things can end up being shown in a way that you don't want them to, or someone screwed up the catalog feed or something, you know? But that's one of those things where if you've got a broad range of products you could promote, you know, based on people's engagement and things like that, catalog's great, but I don't think it's necessary for the typical advertiser who maybe only wants to promote certain products at a time. Otherwise, it's just kind of lazy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say starting off with a catalog is just some basics. And then you can play with the stuff, create these creative carousels and single images, promote specific products. Yeah. Agree with that on this.
Yeah. Have you seen carousels perform as well as single image, or what have you seen there? Does it depend?
I think it depends. It depends. Yeah. Well, usually the shopping campaigns with catalog have the best results, but now and then I find some secret sauce, some creative that works better than this. And well, I don't talk about discounts that works like crazy here. So yeah, whenever we have some discount, it overperforms everything else. But yeah, the catalog carousels, I think it's the base of your account that draws the performance.
Yeah. Yeah, especially for any kind of e-com business, you should run catalog. It's funny you mentioned discounts. I mean, I actually have a video that's going to be kind of coming out on something like that. I think it's on Monday, where so often really has nothing to do with your objective, your optimization, your targeting and placements, all that kind of stuff. It's, is your offer any good? Right? And that's what drives results probably the highest percentage of why you get results or not. It's not because the your campaign and ad set delivery and all that was magical. You told it to give you purchases and it's going to find you purchases. Like if people don't want your offer, they're not going to buy it. Right. So you can customize all that stuff as much as you want, but you're not going to get good results. I mean, the offer, man, that's so important. Like if you can offer a discount, people love discounts, and it's kind of frustrating that sometimes it feels like that's what you have to do. But I mean, that's marketing 101 in a way. Like it doesn't matter if it's email or ads. If you can offer something appealing like a discount, that's what works.
And is it something you discuss with your clients? Because, well, I think a lot of marketers just sit there and setting leverages and rooting for the best. But as you said, the offer is the key. So is it something you discuss with your clients and saying them, well, let's make something more juicy, some better offer for your customers?
Yeah. And to be clear, so my clients are typically the one-on-one variety, right? But yeah, oftentimes they'll tell me all these things that they've done and the way that's set up, and they're so focused on their setup. But you know, I'm looking at the landing page. I'm looking at the offer. Like, you can't overcome these obstacles right now to get good results. Like, it's not even clear like why someone would buy this. You know, what's the motivation? What are the benefits? So yeah, that has to be one of the focuses when you're trying to get the most out of a client, a campaign, whatever it is. Is it a desirable offer? So, and I think for anyone who's looking, especially like an agency looking to take on clients, you should consider that before you take them on. Like, do they have a product that's desirable? What does the website look like? What's the landing page like? What is it, a good experience going through the purchase process? Because that affects your results more than anything else. Yeah, and the ability to offer a discount is pretty big.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, let's move on and talk about URL parameters. Do you have some extra thoughts on it? I think it's pretty straightforward. You should set it so you can see the results in Google Analytics. But do you have some extra tips and tricks for this?
This is a funny topic. It's something I'm battling with right now because I was pretty obsessive with UTM parameters with Universal Analytics. I hate GA4 with a passion.
Yeah.
Really do.
I'm on the same boat.
And so I've had to work really closely with Luke Elliott on my team because he's kind of our GA4 expert to bring me off the ledge and to embrace it again. Because for a while there, I got away from using UTM parameters because I couldn't even figure out how to access that data in GA4. Because like, you know, in the Universal Analytics, like everything was like, you could click into everything. Like, oh, that's interesting. Click into it and get it and drill down, right? In GA4, you can't click on anything. I feel like the interface is so bad. But anyway, neither here nor there. I am doing it again. So I've been more obsessive about it now for any link that I'm sharing. So email, I'm creating a special structure for the emails, a special structure for anything that's organic that's going to Facebook and LinkedIn. And then my ads, I use dynamic URL builder, I think, within Ads Manager.
Yeah, yeah.
So it automatically pulls the placement within the name. I can't remember which field that's for. It pulls the ad ID, campaign ID, and then like I have I can't remember this, my source and that I'm using. But anyway, so I have been doing that lately. And one of the things I've been doing is trying to compare the quality of results between the ad and the organic stuff. It's still kind of a work in progress, but I think the dynamic URL builder is really useful, especially like to break down things like placement, where it'll automatically indicate. And it seems to only include certain placements in that now, whereas it included more before, I swear, with Universal Analytics. But and then make sure that in GA4 you've got similar events set up there that you monitor within Ads Manager. That's one of the things. Now I use GTM for my pixel and create custom events and things like that. So I do have some similar events already there. They're like for, that's all kind of in the weeds, but I think it's helpful because sometimes ads, look, those numbers are never going to add up. Or never match up, right? Yeah. And I think that's the first thing that people need to understand. So you don't use it to say Ads Manager is wrong, Google GA4 is right, because it's not. Like Ads Manager has different information than GA4 has, especially when you're talking about view-through conversions, which can be useful depending on the type of conversion, or a 7-day click, even 28-day click, or cross-device, right? GA4 is going to struggle when connecting it to your ad. So they're not going to match up. I think one of the areas that I used it recently was I've been desperately trying to find a way to still drive quality traffic because Meta doesn't want to be able to do this in a built-in way. So I was using custom events that I was optimizing for to watch an embedded video on my website, right? And Ads Manager results were all looking really good, even with the 1-day click attribution setting. And then GA4 was showing like an average time spent of like 6 seconds. Like that's not good, right? So that it's good for like a backup reporting to confirm or not what you think you're seeing in Ads Manager. Beyond that, they're not going to match up and you're going to drive yourself crazy trying to make a match up. But you should make it part of your habits, like I'm trying to do as well. And embrace GA4, I guess, unless there's another solution.
Okay, so I think we both agree that there is nothing like source of truth. There are just a bunch of different numbers in the system and in GA. But if you have to choose some source of truth, is a ads manager for you?
Yeah, I mean, it starts there because, look, yes, there's going to be issues with tracking and all the iOS stuff, but sure. But view through conversions, ads manager is the only one that can measure view through conversions because right. Google doesn't know that someone saw an ad and didn't click, right? There's also a matter of like cross device that just, in my mind, at least makes sense. You're on your phone, you're logged into Facebook, you click an ad, you're on your desktop, you're still logged into Facebook 7 days later, and you just Google the website and go to the website and buy. I'm not an expert on GA4. Is GA4 able to connect those two? Well, I would guess it struggles with it, whereas Ads Manager has pretty clear and obvious data there to match them up. So look, Ads Manager still isn't perfect. I think some advertisers struggle with the fact that it uses modeling and what exactly that means. But I've found more often than not, and I think it also depends on your audience. I don't know why, I have my theories on why this is, but the vast majority of my traffic is still desktop, which is kind of crazy. But I think it's because I have an audience that's mainly like in an office.
Yeah, right?
Makes sense. Working on Ads Manager, stuff like that. So because of that, I think I have fewer gaps in my Ads Manager reporting than someone if like everything is on a mobile device. So, you know, find what works for you in that way too. But, you know, I've seen more people discuss this lately where it's also a point where just it is what it is. Like, it's not going to be perfect. It's going to be very imperfect. You're going to drive yourself crazy if you're trying to find one perfect solution to say that this happened. The main thing is this reporting from Ads Manager at least possible, right? So what I mean by that is, are they saying that more conversions happened than happened, period, in the business? Like, you sold more of these things than, it doesn't matter the source or anything that you can verify on the back end. Like, there were 10 total purchases according to the back end. Meta's saying there are 100. If that happens, yeah, there's something wrong, right? But if your complaint is that GA4 or some other source is saying, oh, they only say 10 of these came from Facebook, that stuff isn't, I don't buy it, right? Like, Ads Manager, it's as long, they're not making up data, I think is the main thing here in Ads Manager, right? So it's not perfect. And I think that's just one, as we go forward, it's going to get harder and harder. Do whatever you can to track it and set up secondary validation and things like that. But beyond that, and also just know how to make sense of the data. So if Ads Manager says you've had 100 purchases, what's the context there? So compare attribution settings. You've got 15 that are one-day view. You've got 30 that were one-day click. You've got another 30 that were seven-day click. You know, that kind of stuff helps make sense of that data and also helps you understand, oh, that's why it doesn't match up with GA4, because the one-day click is really what's matching up there, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, I think that's just letting go a little bit is probably a good solution these days. It's not going to get any easier either.
Okay, so you started with attribution windows, and I want to ask, which attribution window you use for the campaign optimization? Because I believe that in one of your videos, you said something like you want to track everything that's possible, so you go with 7 day clicks, 1 day view, right?
Well, so here's what I mean. If you have any kind of purchase, so your attribution setting there controls a couple of things. It's in your ad set. So that's also how the delivery of your ads will be optimized. So for example, if you set it at 7-day click, 1-day view, it will, the algorithm is looking for results and it will feel like it's successful if it's getting you results and if they fall in that window, right?
Yeah.
So a point being, it impacts delivery, but it also impacts default reporting. You can always look at the compare attribution settings to break it down, and you may see conversions that happen outside of the attribution setting window, right? My point is this: if you're optimizing for a purchase, 7-day click, 1-day view makes sense in almost all cases, because that's a situation where, unless it's like a $5 product or something, it often is going to take more than 1 day for someone to make up their decision to say, oh yeah, definitely I want to do that. But if it's a lead, they're just completing a form for something free, you got a free ebook, registering for a free webinar. If you're optimizing for custom events, like I was talking about, where these things can happen multiple times, there's no thought process there. They're not, oh, I don't know if I should do this. They're either going to do it or they're not. Right. So they're not going to click on it, come back 7 days later to complete that thing in most cases. And when it comes to custom events, if you use 7-day click, 1-day view for something that's like based on scroll depth and things on your website, what's going to happen is it's going to optimize for these people who didn't even see your ad and they're just there on your website every day anyway. And it's just loading up events for you. So if it's a purchase, that's why I say if it's a purchase, in your attribution setting, 7-day click, 1-day view in almost all cases. But if it's any other type of action, website action, 1-day click, I can't really come up with a good reason to use anything other than 1-day click. Otherwise, what's bound to happen is you're going to get inflated results. Because I can't come up with a good reason why a 1-day view would be credited for just a free lead. Right, it just doesn't make any sense. Like my ad didn't really contribute in that case. I could say it contributed to a purchase. That makes sense because it takes more thought. But for anything else, you're just going to click it and do it. Right? At least that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I get it. I'm not sure about the purchases either because, well, when I review my campaigns and I have a 7-day click, 1-day view, I see that there are tons of post-view conversions. And there is quite a few conversions for 1-day click, 7-day click, whatever, post-click conversions. And I feel like that if I optimize the campaign for, let's say, just 7-day click or 1-day click and exclude the one-day view window, mm-hmm. I get more, let's say, quality conversion or... Well, the conversion is still the same quality, but it's attributed to Facebook probably more than it deserves because there are other channels that leads the conversion to you. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, it's first of all, a good thing to test. It makes sense. My thought is as long as you are always aware of the breakdown of 1-day view, 1-day click, 7-day click, 1-day engage view, even 28-day click. 7-day click, 1-day view, I still prefer. But yeah, if you have a situation where you have a very high percentage of 1-day view, that means then, yes, the algorithm is loading up on what is basically remarketing. But yeah. if it's like a 10%, In my mind, like 10% is a pretty reasonable slice of your conversions for 1-day view, because it's reasonable to me that, okay, that was either remarketing where they saw it and maybe it contributed. I mean, in all cases, yes, 1-day view is less impactful than 1-day click. But as long as it's a small percentage, I think I can say, yeah, that's legit. And people, you know, can view it, Google later, whatever. So it's just a matter of keeping an eye on your results and making sure that it's not a high percentage. Because if it is a high percentage, then yeah, that doesn't make any sense either. There's a healthy amount of view through in there. I think that's also why it is useful that they've offered one day engage view now too. I know we talked about static links, static image links being probably more effective for conversions, but if you use a video, at least at that point, you know, if somebody watched a video for at least 10 seconds and then converted within a day without clicking, that adds a layer to, should I believe that view through contributed or not, right? So, I mean, I totally get what you're saying, and it may be the right way, but I think the main thing is that you just understand, like, you're always aware of the number of view through that's coming through, because there is a matter, it's healthy or unhealthy.
Okay, I agree. Now, let's discuss a topic that will be interesting for a lot of our listeners in here. And imagine you're running campaign in a smaller market like Czechia. Imagine size of North Carolina or Michigan with around 10 million folks. How would you tweak your approach, or would you go as usual? Or what's the usual size of your audience? Do you go U.S. broad or...
Well, I mean, look, since I'm typically using Advantage Plus audience, it eventually has the entire country that I'm targeting available, right? So no matter what I put in to my targeting inputs, those are just targeting suggestions. So I typically use US, Canada, UK, Australia. In those cases, those audiences can automatically be as big as Meta wants to make it. Once they go beyond my targeting suggestions. But so, yeah, for local biz, I mean, it's a challenge. I mean, I think it depends partially too on, assuming you're only relevant to people in that country or in that state. I would use Advantage Plus audience, number one. And number two, I would provide targeting suggestions. But what I think is probably not the best idea in most cases for super small potential audience sizes based on geography is using the old targeting methods and then limiting the algorithm just to like, oh, people have this certain interest. Interests are, how many interests even exist now? Like they just keep getting phased out, and the amount that are even available that are effective is dwindling. So I would say use them as a suggestion, but you also don't want to limit your targeting just to your targeting inputs in a small area, because otherwise it's going to burn out really fast and just stop working. I mean, I think there is the case too, if you live in like a, or you have a small local business where it's like a restaurant or something, and you only want to target the surrounding cities.
Yeah.
Like there's really no reason to provide any interest. Like what kind of interest are you can provide there? You're not going to say people who like pizza. Like there's a time when that made sense, but like everybody likes pizza. Or, yeah. it's a very broadly embraced type of food, you know? So, and again, those interests aren't even entirely accurate. So in those cases, I think for the most part, going broader probably makes sense. If you've got some good custom audiences, or you can even experiment with lookalike audiences or something to give it targeting suggestions, provide that too. That's always going to be the battle, right? Is limited potential audience size.
Okay, so I want to ask you about remarketing. How's your approach with it? Because I feel it might be a little buzzword, because, well, everybody talks about remarketing, how great is it? And maybe it's because, well, we have the smaller audience here, as I mentioned in previous question. But I often feel like that it doesn't make sense at all. Sometimes it works, but I usually have to use quite broad audiences for it anyway, like 30 days visitors with nothing better than that. So yeah. what What's your experience with remarketing and how do you use it?
It's funny. Yeah, remarketing was the primary way I advertised back in the day. Now, part of that was, you know, I had a decent sized remarketing audience and it was also cheap. And remarketing is not as cheap as it used to be.
It's getting more and more expensive these days. Yeah.
Right. But the other thing is, look, there are a lot of advertisers who will say that remarketing is dead. And the reason they say that is, like, for Advantage Plus Shopping, Advantage Plus Audience is an example. The way that targeting works is it starts with your conversion history and your pixel data and people have engaged with your ads before, even if you don't put in any targeting suggestions, right? So their claim is there's no reason to waste money on remarketing anymore. And I understand up to a point. Like, I don't really think there's a reason to remarket the way we used to remarket and like the way I used to remarket, right? Because in the past, I would often do broad remarketing campaigns. What I mean by broad remarketing would be like all people who have visited my website over the last 180 days, all people who have engaged with my Facebook page or post over the last 365 days, you know, and just include all of these broader groups of anyone who's engaged with my stuff at all. And that stuff doesn't really seem necessary anymore, right? Because the algorithm should be smart enough to pick that stuff out to immediately start with those kinds of people. I think where remarketing can make sense still would be you have a specific message for a very small, specific audience that's only relevant to them. So abandoned cart scenario, like you only want to offer a discount to a certain group of people, especially like the abandoned cart, and you're trying to get them to complete it. Now, I wouldn't say optimizing for a conversion in that case, because you're usually going to be dealing with really small audiences and you don't want to expand that audience. I still do this when it comes to like people who have hit the landing page of my membership. They'll be sent into this, what's a reach campaign, an awareness campaign, excuse me, where now I'm going to show you ads trying to get you to complete that purchase, right? Just for those people. With this special message. But again, that's a very small part of my advertising now, whereas before I do a lot of remarketing. Now it's just for that very small segment. I think that remarketing can, like using remarketing audiences as a targeting suggestion makes sense. Like, I don't know if it matters.
Yeah.
I don't know. With Advantage Plus Audience. I just feel better about myself if I give it a push and say, hey, start with this group of people. The one other thing I'll say is this, and this is something I've been experimenting with, because I talked about this a little bit when I was talking about using GA4 and UTM parameters, where I was trying to send quality traffic to my website, optimizing for custom events, et cetera. So that's an example where, like, if you're not optimizing for a purchase, the broad stuff can go off the rails.
Yeah, definitely. Right?
I mean, and because it only cares about getting you to that action you asked for. So that's actually what kind of drew my attention to this is when I was using UTM parameters and UTM and GA4 was telling me, even though I was optimizing for this custom event on my website, I was getting 6 second average time spent. Well, that's when I was using Advantage Plus Audience and I was letting it go abroad. Then I say, okay, well, let me experiment with just targeting people who are at least pretty engaged with my stuff. So not super narrow, but, you know, kind of like what you're talking about, the 30-day website custom audience kind of thing. And it is improving the quality and the time spent, you know, according to GA4 as well. So it kind of depends on what your goal is. Like, it's not a good, broad, long-term strategy. Like, you burn out those audiences really quick. I wouldn't use it for a purchase.
Definitely.
If you're going to tell me, like, you have no choice but to run, like, engagement, traffic campaigns, something like that, I would tell you the only way you should do that without burning money is because you're using remarketing and you're not letting it go broad, because the combination of ability to go broad with top of the funnel optimization is just going to lead to empty clicks and engagement. So that's a long-winded response to like,
yeah.
Remarketing has changed. I don't think it's completely dead. There are some specific use cases for it, but yeah, it's way different than it used to be.
Yeah, I had some great results with remarketing our existing customers when we showcased them some stuff just to like us more, like some articles about us, PR articles and stuff. And it have pretty great results. And I used to reach goal. And yeah, I don't see the way to use it with purchase optimization as well.
It's no need. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Another topic I want to discuss with you are meta ads audits. And well, I see this trend of free audits, which only reason to do is to overtake the client, sorry. So you just throw up this offer for free audits and you find as many flaws and mistakes as possible and say, hey, these guys that managing your meta ads are just losers and let's work with us. Is it something that are you familiar with?
I mean, it doesn't surprise me. Yeah, I would say this. I mean, first of all, doing free audits, I wouldn't offer free audits indiscriminately. Like, first of all, it waters down the value of offering that audit in the first place, because that is something that probably should be a paid offer. But second, I would limit it only to someone you see as a potential customer who can set you up for success, right? So, I mean, not everyone has lots of options, I understand, but you want a client who maybe is in an area of expertise where you've managed similar clients before and gotten success. They have a good website. They have a desirable product and a desirable offer. They've got the pixel and everything set up. They have a built-in audience. Like all these things that can make results possible for you in the first place to start. And if basically you have a desirable potential client and they have a budget and they want to spend money, and that those are all really important, then there's risk there to offer a free audit to go through it. Now, to just go through there to bash the prior advertiser or current advertiser, I think is unhealthy and dishonest, because
definitely,
yeah, I think you can't just go in there. If it were me and I were offering someone an audit, and I do this, it's not so much an audit. Like I'll walk through someone's advertising with a client or on a one-on-one. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, what you've been doing is great. You know, I'm not going to tell you it automatically is the wrong approach. And I think, unfortunately, what the expectation there is that you're going in there to find problems and you're going to make something a problem, even if it's not a problem, just to get the business. If you want to offer honest audits where some of them are going to say, hey, it's great, what they're doing is awesome, I mean, have at it. I mean, I don't know. Is this a thing? Are you seeing a lot of that right now?
Yeah, I think it's something that happens a lot in here. I don't know about the rest of the world. Do you have there's a way how to defend yourself against these hostile audits, let's say?
I think that's one of those things that comes down to trust, with your clients. So the more a client trusts you, the less susceptible they will be to someone coming in and trying to take your business, right? So it comes on, comes to you've established yourself as the expert in the scenario. You educate your client where necessary about what you're doing and why. And they allow you to do your job. And they trust you, right? So I would say if you've got a client who is susceptible to one of these free audits, it's because they don't have full trust in what you're doing.
Yeah, and you're probably right. And well, I think, yeah, there's probably nothing more you can do about this. So communicate with your client, educate them, and do a good job. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely it. It really is. And know that you're going to lose business sometimes. And sometimes that's good. Because there are a lot of bad clients that are going to take a lot of your time, that maybe try to tell you how to do your job.
Yeah.
Or who just, you know, again, don't appreciate what you do and allow someone else to deal with that headache. That's fine.
Yeah, you're right. You probably don't want the client that can be overtook like that.
Yeah.
Okay, one last thing about meta ads. Is there one thing, one tip you would give to pay the most attention in the campaign setting? Anything?
I mean,
some secret tip from John Loomer.
There are no real secrets. I mean, the main thing, once again, is whenever possible, number one, optimize for a conversion. Because understand that the algorithm is literal. That's a phrase I'll drive home all day. Like, if you ask for link clicks, you're going to get link clicks, and they might be terrible. If you ask for purchases, it's going to try to get you purchases. So just remember that that's the way the algorithm thinks and adjusts, is trying to get you that thing that you asked for. That's the first thing. And I feel like the two features that not enough advertisers use are the compare attribution settings to get full understanding of your results and the breakdowns. So breaking down by things like placement and country and age and gender to detect some of these problems that are happening. You can get a lot of, and breaking down by day or week to spot trends and how your performance is going. So I wouldn't call those secrets, more than underutilized features that provide a lot of knowledge that, you know, otherwise I feel like you're just advertising blindly sometimes if you don't use them.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for those tips. And before we call it a day, tell us something about yourself, what you do when you don't do meta ads, like in, like two or three sentences.
Oh, two or three sentences. That's
okay. Okay.
Well, so I'm a dad. I'm a dad. I'm a father of three boys. So that's something that took up a lot of my time for a long time. My two oldest boys are out of the house now. But I guess the best I could tell you, I'm a baseball fan. I was a baseball coach for 16 years until my youngest kid moved into high school. And I retired, I guess, from coaching. But that's the biggest thing, is I'm a dad and I love baseball, and I share that love with them.
Okay, great. And one last message for our listeners, some wisdom from John Loomer.
Yeah, always experiment. I think my least favorite question starts with, should I? Right? Should I optimize for link clicks or conversions? Should I use one ad set or five? Should I use CBO or not, right? The answer, first of all, is it depends. But be curious, experiment, try it. Because whatever works for me, nothing I'm telling you right now is universal law, right? It's based on my experiences. Find what works for you. And have this constant curiosity that motivates you to find creative solutions and answers to your own questions and problems.
Okay. Thank you very much, John. It was a pleasure to have you here, and have a great day.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.